Hello and welcome to EG's Voice of the Region with me, Jim Larkin. We continue once again on our voyage of discovery around the UK to understand the pressures and opportunities faced by regional agents who found themselves thrust into the spotlight thanks to excellent performances in the Radius On Demand rankings. This time it's someone who has traded professional sport for a career in commercial property and swapped Ready About Leho for Ready the Lease Hold, which is a reference that will hopefully make more sense in about 60 seconds time. That person is Alice Masterman of Flood, who only fully graduated as a surveyor last year but was recently named 2023's top individual deal maker for the entire southeast region, which objectively is quite the entrance. Alice specializes in retail and leisure on her section of the south coast, and after what's been a turbulent few years for the high street, she offers fresh insight on its reinvention, involving new types of occupiers and new ways in which retail space is being used. And she also asks a question you never hear mentioned in the debate about our high streets: are they simply too long? Well, let's make our way to the starting line and find out. Alice, welcome aboard. Great to have you here. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Now, your career path into commercial property wasn't a conventional one, to say the least. Can you just talk a little bit about your life before Flood?
Yeah, so I did my undergraduate degree at Southampton Uni, basically because I just wanted to go sailing all the time. So I joined a South Coast Uni, went sailing, and I was part of the British sailing team for 4 years. And basically loved it, traveled around the world, competed at a really high level. I completed my master's in real estate at Oxford Brookes alongside that at one point, but that definitely was to help fund my sailing, to say the least. And then in June 2021, I had completed some work experience at Flood. I'd done some work experience elsewhere as well. It was sort of coming to a bit of a sticking point in my sailing career, and I decided to join the world of property.
Sure. Okay. So you were kind of just basically going right around the world being paid to sail.
So I was campaigning for Paris 2024, Tokyo 2020 and Paris 2024, in a double-handed skiff in a women's sports team, and it was a really great opportunity.
That sounds like a very glamorous lifestyle, but was it?
No, it sounds a lot more glamorous than it is. I definitely do remember having to camp quite a lot, because funds are low. You say you're being paid, but a lot of it is a very expensive sport to get into. You are traveling quite a lot, you're having to fund a lot. Every penny earned went into the sport again, so it's quite nice to be away from that and enjoy life a little bit in a different way.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, so once you decided to hang up your sailing gear, why did you pick property and how did you kind of go about making it happen?
So I always had an interest in property, so I sort of knew I wanted to go into it from an early, from a young age. I didn't really like the idea of money. You can't really see that transacting. And I always thought I do like the idea of dealing with people. It's really cool with property that you do see a physical result at the end of it. And especially in the commercial agency world, you do see you are involved in the process from start to finish. You get to see people go into a property, you get to negotiate the sales. And I sort of just came upon it just by I did a lot of work experience with different sectors. So I did a few firms in London, and then I did a bit with Flood before I joined them. And I think it was really good because I could actually see a day-to-day life of an agent before I actually joined the world. And that was really important for me because I was a little bit late to a career. If you look at it, I came in at 25, 26 as a graduate surveyor, when most people do that at 21. So I did feel like I had to catch up quite quickly.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. And do you feel like were there any skills or lessons that sailing taught you that kind of you can apply in a business sense?
Yeah, definitely. There's so many transferable skills from any competitive sport background. You don't really realise that at the time, because at the end of the day, you're I'm just going out on the water, going sailing. But there's a lot more behind the scenes. You have to do everything logistically, time management, planning your day, making sure everything fits into it, working under pressure, being tired and making rational decisions, everything that goes into it. And I think when I joined the working world, I think just slotting so much into my day just came easy. I actually found I had more time going into the world of work because I wasn't so dictated by the weather and sailing. Like if there was good wind, we were sort of, or bad wind, we were waiting around for that. My time was so dictated by other things, but it's really nice to have a structure of a 9 to 5, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah, no, I've never really thought about it like that. It's like, yeah, no one ever says, oh, you can't do this deal today because the wind's coming from the wrong direction or something.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people probably think of Flewed as a Brighton / Sussex agent, yeah. But it's kind of expanded west into Hampshire, and you're working out of the Portsmouth office, focused on the retail sector, and I guess your patch covers everything from Southampton in the west out to probably Chichester. Was it a deliberate choice to focus on retail? And did you have any concerns going into that? Given the avalanche of doom and gloom we've had about the death of the high street.
I think a lot of it has just all fallen into place quite nicely. Benefits of being in a smaller firm is you do get exposed to all sectors really, really quickly. Like you don't have to go through the rotations. Literally, if you wanted to do every sector from professional to agency Monday to Friday, you could complete it, or you could go out with someone. But I started off in Chichester. I was working along an investment and doing a little bit of the professional side as well, assisting with that. And then an opening came up in Portsmouth to help the agency. And it just naturally covers a lot more retail just because of the nature of work we have over here. And I think when you're a younger, like starting off in your career, having a retail transaction is quite good to get your teeth stuck into, because it's, you're dealing with quite low rents, quite low risk. You have to actually explain a lot to some of the tenants going in there because they're new to the business as well. And explaining it suddenly helps your understanding. You're learning a lot more about the rate, like business rates, the discounts available, then all the way to what a service charge covers. So all of a sudden in one simple transaction, you're suddenly dealing with it. And I think that's where I sort of started out and then found out that I really did enjoy it. And yes, retail does have this negative doom and gloom, but it obviously we do stay quite busy with it, and it keeps us busy. And I've learned so much doing it, and I think I wouldn't have been able to get to where I am without having that experience.
Okay. Now, you were only promoted to surveyor last year, I think, in June last year, and yet you finished 2023 as the top individual deal maker for the entire Southeast region on the Radius rankings. How?
I think it was just we're quite used to quite fast transactions, so yes, we might not do the big square footage that some of the bigger firms do. We deal with a lot of smaller transactions. You see them from start to finish. We have quite a lot of quantity in Portsmouth. You'd be surprised that we can just churn through them, I suppose. That's the right way, the brutal way of putting it. I think the great thing about Flewed is I've been thrown in the deep end with it. So yes, I was only surveyor in June last year, and I sat my APC in November at the end of 2023, but I was put on deals quite early, and I think that really, really helped. And I saw a lot of them from start to finish on my own quite quickly. And then you start getting your own projects, and all of a sudden you have got your own targets. And that sort of comes together, but we do work quite well as a team as well across Portsmouth and Chichester, and that obviously helps.
Okay. So, I guess you kind of built up that element of trust with the rest of the company very quickly.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. A lot is made about the loss of high street brands from so far this year we've had the Body Shop and Ted Baker in administration, and I think Papa John's yesterday or the day before announced loads of closures. But is there kind of a less talked about reverse side to this, where we're seeing much more in the way of independent retail opening up?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I joined Flewed 2 years ago, you'd walk down Commercial Road, for example, in Portsmouth, and we had a lot of big vacancies, like a lot of big stores. And I think that's the problem when we lost your Topshop, your Burton's, Dorothy Perkins, like people leaving these massive retail stores of 4,000 to 5,000 square feet, now your Wilko. But now landlords have been a little bit more creative with it, and they are splitting up these units. So they are splitting them up to smaller to fit into small business rates relief. You know, they're making them easy accessible. So all of a sudden, these 4,000 square foot units can be split up into even like 3 or 4. And then that's more accessible for independent occupiers, and they can see that. And especially with all the rates relief at the moment, or if it does fit in that small business rates relief, they can go into a shop now with relatively low startup costs. And yes, rents did go down post COVID, but that's, you know, they bottomed out, and it was cheaper than ever to open up a shop if anyone wanted to take that plunge. So I think, yeah, there's the doom and gloom of the big occupiers leaving, but I just think if you're a bit more creative and you're willing to do something different with your shop, you're going to be able to let it out, and there is demand for it.
Okay. Are there any kind of sectors or subsectors within retail that you think are going to be real growth areas this year?
Oh, well, it's actually been really surprised that just your general clothing brands are starting to come back, and actually some of the ones that left the high street a few years ago are starting to come back, because I think when industrial rents going up and logistics, that you still need somewhere to store stuff. And we've seen, for example, like McDonald's has come back to the high street in a few places and set up as a dark kitchen, because why would they go out to an industrial unit when it costs so much, when retail can be a lot cheaper? So we've seen some clothing brands actually come back, take use of the space, and then use it for a lot of deliveries. If you speak to a lot of store managers, they say that they take a lot of deliveries from their store, but they're not upset about that because people are more likely to come in, spend money if they pick a parcel up from a store. So yes, I think a lot of clothing brands starting to come back. I think coffee still remains quite popular, a lot of independent suppliers of that, and probably not what people want to hear, especially with like the health scares of it now. But we are still seeing like the big inquiries for like your vape stores, and then also all your services that we realized in COVID that we couldn't live without. Like you, yes, we tried our own hair dressing and barbers at home, but actually we'd rather go to a store to go get that. And a lot of the health sector as well, like your aesthetics, your beauty, dentists, like they're starting to come up and pop up in like smaller locations and retail units. That's definitely becoming more of a thing. So yeah, I think they will still stay quite small spaces, and but we will see probably like more of them. Yeah.
Okay. And what do you think town centres need to do in order to, retain their vitality and make visitors keep turning up?
So biggest thing for me is I don't really get why high streets have to be so long. If I ever went to the shops, coming from like a consumer point of view, I hate the idea of when you're at the top of a high street and then you look at, I don't know, where the next store you need to go to, and you've got a good 10-minute walk to go to the other end. And you're like, well, we've only put on parking for an hour, and it costs sometimes a fortune. So that's one thing, parking, I think, need to make it more accessible. But also, why do they need to be so long? And what we've seen in well, in Portsmouth especially, because of some developments going up either end of Commercial Road, is the high street has condensed. And I think that's made such a difference, because that means now we have one vacancy now left in the high street. And yes, there's Arundel Street, which does look a bit horrible at the moment, but yeah, I think having a smaller high street is better. We don't need all of your sub streets off, like, so definitely condensing it. And then I think making it more of an experience, like we've seen the rise of like competitive drinking games, like your battle axe throwing, your boom bar, so like more of an experience to sort of last us from like the day into night, and having that constant like flow, so people are coming at all times of day. And then just, well, what we've seen a lot as well is investing into making like seating areas as well, like more of like the using the outdoor space, making it more that just look more appealing, I suppose. And yeah, and I think at the end of the day, people like the social element of going to the shops, so you need to make it a day out.
Sure. Okay. So
Yeah.
kind of fewer shops and more variety.
Yeah, we're just closer together, I think. Like, sometimes you have the same amount of shops, but you've also got the big vacancies in between, and which unfortunately have been left by, like our big department stores, like your Debenhams. And it's just finding a way of using that space in between, or just trying to condense it all together. Maybe I'm just being lazy.
Okay. And what help do you think our town centres need from government or, even higher powers that would kind of set them on the path to bring things back?
Yeah, so the business rates relief, or so discount, is on again next year, for literally from next week, for 24 to 2025, for the 75% discount. That's made a real difference. And before that was re-announced, it was quite difficult when we were chatting to occupiers. We were saying, look, this will be your business rates till April or end of March this year, but then it could go up, so factor that in. But when you suddenly put that 75% discount in there, that made such a huge difference. I know that they have to offset it. It's all about balancing act with any budget, and it has to be offset elsewhere. But if you think about what really needs the help, it definitely is that retail and leisure, with other costs rising, like your food costs, utility costs. So I think keeping some support somewhere, which is like another cost they don't have to think about, is really great. Startup grants, I think a few councils do like the crowdfunders, and they'll match them, which I think is a really cool idea. And I think what's great about that is it really does push businesses to prove that they deserve it as well, you know, that they've got to go get the funding and then the council will match up. And I think we've seen some positive side of that. And I think just realizing as well that there is already support out there, but I don't think it gets, maybe it's not publicized enough, but you know, a lot of councils do have that economic support or the business support. So they'll help you write a business plan if you need that. They'll guide, you know, what costs are involved in setting up shop. Like as an agent, I'm always happy if someone's saying like I'm setting up a business, I'm looking in this area, ask the questions and you should get some answers. Maybe we won't know them all, but you know, we are trying to help you. If we want to put a tenant in that's going to last, we don't want to have that same shop back in 6 months and an annoyed landlord that we've put in a tenant that's gone bust. You know, we are trying to think of promoting longevity to the high street.
Sure. Okay. You sort of touched on this a little bit, but are you finding that leisure is becoming an increasingly important part of the overall mix? I mean, I kind of noticed that lots of banks that have shut down have now kind of being reinvented as bars or restaurants and things like that. Is that the case on the South Coast?
Yeah, so I would, it has changed slightly with the increase, cost of living. So about 2 years ago, what was it, summer 2022, I would say 90% of our inquiries was food and leisure. We would put up an old restaurant on the market and it would be have so many inquiries and we would get rid of it and it would go for a premium as well. Because of, I know they're facing increased costs and they are struggling, that definitely I've seen that food and leisure has gone down because of that. It is starting to rise up again, I think, as we've sort of just got used to what it is, what it is. Unfortunately, these prices I don't think will go down, so definitely on the way back up. But so I think your smaller independent food uses probably hasn't been that, hasn't increased recently. But then your the nighttime leisure, like competitive drinking and all of that, that has increased. And I think that is really important because, as I said, you want to be able to go to a place to socialize, to experience things and enjoy yourself. And I think that's why, like the young people, we do like to spend money and we do like to go out and enjoy ourselves. And if there's alternatives to just going to a bar, then we definitely will go for it.
Sure. Okay. What's the kind of overall sentiment like within the leisure sector? Because I remember writing a story a couple of weeks ago saying that pub closures or pub administrations were at their highest for 10 years or something. Are you feeling that? I mean, are people feeling kind of nervous, or is there grounds for optimism?
Well, I think there's a really interesting point because I had to do a planning report on a pub and their alternative uses. Like, is there that pub use viable in that area? And it was saying that actually people would rather go now for quality nights out instead of quantity. So instead of going to your local once a night, you know, every night, now we look at, right, Saturday night, let's go, you know, for lots of things, you know, like let's go to the cinema, let's go to this for a meal, let's go for the pub, let's go to a night out. So I think now I would agree with that. And I think I've seen that across my friends as well, is that we would rather go for quality over quantity. So yes, I do see why the local, it's like long live the local, isn't it? Like why they would potentially be struggling from that. I haven't seen as many closures, but I would say in Portsmouth, apparently we have the most amount of pubs concentrated in one area. So actually, a few closures might be doing everyone a favour a
Yeah,
little
you probably
bit.
spare a few in that case.
It doesn't leave gaping holes, basically, if anywhere to close. But yeah, I would say that if you speak to a lot of tenants, it is definitely the first thing they bring up if they are struggling is the cost of energy and the cost of, you know, putting food on someone's plate. It's cost more to make it, they would say, than actually what they sell it for.
Yeah, that's not sustainable.
No, and I hope they get through it. Like, but I think also off the back of COVID, it's really hard because they've suddenly, businesses can make it through recessions, and I think the ones that do really well from it and have that like sort of positive mentality, like we can get through anything. But it is very soon after a like COVID where they had their own struggles and they have a lot of debt. So hopefully we don't see as many closures as we, you know, predicted. Like we keep saying that, like every month we're like, or every quarter we're like, this is it, we're going to have a load more closures, let's be careful, tenants might be going into administration or forfeiting their lease or leaving the building. And we just actually haven't seen it.
Fingers crossed it stays like that. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Hopefully.
Changing subject. One of the kind of main lessons I've learned from doing this podcast past for a few years now is that the kind of regional agency world, there isn't an overrepresentation of women. Why do you think that is in the first place? And what do you think can be done about it?
Yeah, it's I think because I've always come from a male dominated sport anyway, I'm used to being sometimes the only female in the room, and that hasn't been that isn't new to me. Like, I am part of the Women's Sports Trust. I'm a female coach, and I always encourage trying to get female sailors in. So it's not a new thing to me. I think the issue is where it stems from, probably like school. Like, I don't think real estate was ever advertised to me. Definitely you do get pushed into more subjects. I can't remember anyone saying to me, you should do this or you can't do this. But I just think naturally you do have that push into it. It just can't really explain it. You just feel like you are sidelined into this is a job that you should go into. So I definitely did see that. I think, you know, on my course there was definitely more males, I think, percentage wise. And I think you see that at your A level, the subjects you pick that would go into that uni degree. So do you think it does start from a younger age? Agency wise, it's definitely, yeah, I would agree there's less females on the South Coast in our agency sector, but then you have got some big names who are, you know, doing really good, like really cool stuff, and lots of deals. So I don't think that should put anyone off. It's just sort of, I think, encouraging people that is a career that is available. But I suppose, yeah, when you're choosing a job, going into surveying is actually quite a bit of a minefield, because I remember applying to like building surveying jobs before realizing that it's not what I actually want to do, because it all comes under that bracket for surveying. There's no this is an agency job or this is a valuation job. I think that maybe needs to be a little bit clearer as well, just to sort of make that easier. What can be done about it? I suppose just more people speaking up about it, saying like, this is the career that you should take, that you should do it. There's lots of perks to it. It's a really enjoyable career. I would say that I haven't had many experiences where I've not been welcomed. Like, there's definitely, you do experience from some older clients, maybe some sexist comments, but I wouldn't say that puts me off. But you do have to be quite strong personality, I think, as well, to sort of, especially in the agency market, and maybe that puts people off. But I'm really hoping that people aren't put off.
So I mean, what would your message be to say, you know, someone, a young woman at university wondering what they're going to do with their career? What would you say to them about property?
Do it. It's honestly such a great career. I love every day coming to work. It's a different day every day. You're not just always in the office, you're out and about, you're meeting people, whether it's other agents, it's clients, or just people looking for a property to go into. It's a really fulfilling role as well, I think. And I think just getting the satisfaction of seeing something from start to finish and doing a deal, like, you can't beat that. And it gets, it's quite an adrenaline rush, and it's why you just want to do more. I think, and also there is a role for everyone. I don't think in any business, what I've learned is that there is, if you wanted to go into more the marketing, you could definitely do that. If you wanted to go into agency, you could definitely do that. If you wanted to maybe more the reports, the valuation side, there's so many more. Like, just because you come in as one role doesn't mean you are limited within that. And I think that's the same with a lot of careers, and that's what we don't realize. Like, if I wanted to do the accounts or more the business side, I'm sure there's a role available that I could go into that.
I think I was going to ask, how useful is your sailing background when it comes to some of the social events that the property sector has on the South Coast?
Very useful. I don't think my parents realised when they put me in sailing and to encourage an Olympic campaign that it would actually help me more in my property career than it would in my Olympic sailing. It's great. I think it does help being having a sport behind you. There's a lot of social events. So I'm involved in Prop Sail. I'm going to another event in Seaview in May. That's really good. Another thing I'm doing around the island with a few property connections. And yeah, it's just great. It's one of those sports that is quite relatable. Like, if you meet someone who sails, it's very likely that you do know them. They're both small worlds, property and sailing. And so when they overlap, it's even smaller. And it's great as well, I think, coming, as you said, there's not many females in property, there's not many females in sailing, so it's quite easy to stand out. And, you know, I'm hopefully quite good at what I do in property, and I'm quite good at what I do in sailing. So It's quite nice to merge the two. And also it did mean when I sailed, I did get into cycling as well. I always like to cycle to keep up my fitness, and there's lots of property cycling events. And so when it comes into summer, it's a lot of sailing and cycling, and it's apparently my job, which I love. So I don't know why you wouldn't choose this career.
Yeah, you've done very well there. Okay. Right. Finally, crystal ball time then. There's obviously, it feels like there's an awful lot going on in the world at the moment. But what are your thoughts for how the property sector is going to kind of, how things are going to shape up in 2024? And are you feeling generally positive?
It honestly goes in waves. I don't think, well, personally, so I haven't ever worked in a time when there's been doom and gloom. Like, I wasn't working in COVID, I was sailing, and I had my own stresses on with that. And when I joined Fluda, there were so many other things, you know, going on, like joining the world of work. And now you just hear negative things on the news, you do sort of sit there and get worried, but then it's not being reflected in the work that you're doing. Like, we're still very busy. You chat to other agents from different firms and they're still very busy. You might have a few quiet days and I'm like, oh, this is it. This is, you know, if we're going into our downturn, I'm not going to get any deals this year. What's happening? The phones are quiet. And then 2 days later, you're like, why did I curse it? We're really busy again and I'm out and about. So I don't, it's really hard to predict, because it's really hard to separate, yeah, what's going on in the news. And that makes you, you know, I definitely have seen, you know, less, my money going isn't going as far as it used to do. But then equally, you're like, well, actually, we're still very busy. So hopefully we keep that momentum up. We definitely think, like, with the elections coming up, like, people might be, you know, waiting for something to happen. So yes, we have seen sales inquiries have gone down. Sales are definitely a lot trickier, but the lettings market is still busy. So hopefully sales will improve. People feel a bit more certain about it. With costs about building costs and everything, hopefully developments like come back again, because we definitely did see a dip in developers wanting to buy properties, convert them, because they just don't stack up. So yeah, seen a few more inquiries of those. Sales hopefully will improve and will hopefully, I think there's just basically a misalignment between what a landlord wants to, or an owner wants to sell it for, and what someone wants to buy it for. But we are starting to come closer together. And hopefully lettings just stay where they are, because they are a very active market and they just keep us ticking along.
Excellent. Okay. Well, on that optimistic note, I think we'll bring things to a close. Alice, thank you ever so much for your time. That was great.
Thank you very much.